How's it going, everyone? And welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And we're fresh off of a red-hot UFC event, UFC 307. I would say, you know, had its issues, but I did pretty good overall picks-wise. 4-1 on the main card, 9-3 total on the card, so I cannot complain. There was some spotty judging, but I'd say out of those spotty judgings, only one or two didn't really go my way, so I wasn't really too bad when it came to my predictions for the event. Plus, Alex Barrow won, which I was super happy about. We're currently battling, I don't know if I'm getting a cold or if I'm getting sickness or something, but the throat is getting a little raspy, nose is a bit iffy, so we're going to try and power through this. We got a lot to talk about today, of course, recapping all the action from UFC 307, recapping everything that went down at NFL Week 5. Just nothing went, the Vikings won. Okay, the Vikings won, I cannot complain. But other than that, fantasy-wise, not the best week. I don't really know what went down there. And also predictions-wise, was kind of missing on stuff. But we're going to go back into the lab, and we'll be back next week for that. But we will be talking about all the games that have happened so far. This is being recorded before the Chiefs-Saints game, just so everyone is aware. Also, new things in pop culture. Also, new UFC news. And also, we're going to be looking at WWE Bad Blood. WWE had a huge PLE, which is essentially their pay-per-views, if you will, this past Saturday in Atlanta, Georgia. And a lot of big stuff happened, so we're going to be giving our thoughts on that. So, as always, let's not waste any time. Let's get right on into things with, of course, the first thing we always talk about on every episode of the Surprise Jet Podcast, which is new UFC news. And we have a couple of confirmed fights, but there is one rumored fight, which is apparently January pay-per-view, 311, is going to be Sean Strickland versus Driscus Duplessis 2 rematching in Los Angeles. That's all a rumor right now. I kind of don't hope that is the case. I'd rather see the winner of Robert Whitaker and Hamzat Chimaev face DDP. I think Strickland needs one more win. And, you know, you got Kyle Barallo, you got Nazarene Imavov rematch. That would be perfect. Both of those fights are right there for him. I think he should do that, but I don't know. That's just a rumored fight. I like DDP, you know, Sean, he's all right, but we'll have to see what happens there. But we do have some confirmed fights, as I was mentioning. First off, going down to UFC 309 on the prelims, November 16th at welterweight, Oban the Welsh Gangster Elliott is back against Basile Hafez. Both of these guys starting their UFC careers off pretty good, 2-0 for Oban Elliott and 1-1 for Basile Hafez. That one lost a split decision fight of the night to Jack Della Maddalena. That's right, the number 5 welterweight in the world. This should be a fun one. Oban Elliott, 11-2 professionally. Like I said, 2-0 in the UFC. Dominated Val Woodburn and Preston Parsons in both of those matchups. Basile, you know, he beat Mickey Gall, and I would have liked to see a bit more out of him in that one. But, you know, let's see what he did against Jack Della Maddalena. I know that he's going to be good. And that's a fun prelim right there. I like that one. Here's one for you, UFC 311, which, like I said, is rumored to be going down in Los Angeles. January 18th, though, is the confirmed date. This one at bantamweight, Rinya Nakamura, the 9-0 undefeated star from Japan, beating Fern Garcia, beating Carlos Vera, beating Toshima Kazama. This dude has been absolutely electric, and I love watching him in the octagon. He takes on Muing Gafurev, who's 1-2, one of the only fighters from Tajikistan. One win in the UFC is over Kyung Ho Kang. This should be a little fun one. Probably on the prelims, I would assume. Big Rinya Nakamura fan. I think he's going to be a star at bantamweight one day. We'll have to see what transpires here, but I am going to back him in that matchup. Here's one for you. UFC Tampa going down in, of course, Florida, Tampa Bay, December 14th at the Amil Arena. Didn't even know that. Featherweight Cub Swanson is back. Cub Swanson, the UFC legend, 28-15 professionally. So this will be, what, number 44 for him professionally fight? He takes on Billy Quarantillo. Billy, I believe he lost his last matchup or something. Billy, he's always been that guy that can never break into the UFC rankings, but beats everyone who's unranked. So give me Billy Quarantillo over Cub Swanson. Cub Swanson, crazy enough, owns wins over Jeremy Stevens, Charles Oliveira, and Dustin Poirier. Crazy the fights that used to take place back 10 years ago in the UFC. Finally, a little ranked action for you. This one for UFC 311. Halton Almeida, the number 6 heavyweight in the world, who is 21-3 with 20 finishes. Okay, utterly insane. Takes on Sergey Spivak, number 7th ranked heavyweight, coming off his big win over Marcin Tybura, submitted him in round number 1, to no one's surprise. As for Almeida, he manhandled Alexander Romanov. That fight seemed unfair from the get-go when that took place. I'm excited for this one. Give me Halton Almeida. You know, these two are both grapplers. They do no striking. They do legit no striking. And the only fights they lose is when they have to strike. But I just think Holt Lomate is grappling. It's much more aggressive, much more powerful than Sergey Spivak. But hey, this should be an interesting one. I assume this will be on the main card, presumably. Anything else might happen. Here's one that I don't think it's going to be the main event, but you never know. January 11th, this one's probably going to be a fight night. Chris Curtis, the number 15th ranked middleweight in the world, takes on Roman Kopilov. Roman, back in the win column not too long ago over Cesar Almeida, who recently won this past weekend. We'll be talking about that. He's taking on Chris Action Man Curtis. This guy, he's beating Brendan Allen, beating Rodolfo Vieira, beating Joaquin Buckley. Chris Curtis is Action Man, just as his nickname says. And hey, 31-11, this will be his 43rd pro fight. Dude is such a legend. He was just posting about his adopted son and just how much that he's changed his life, which is just absolutely amazing. I like Chris Curtis. I also kind of like Roman Kopilov, but in this type of fight, give me Roman Kopilov. Not Roman Kopilov. Chris Curtis. I'm switching my pick. Chris Curtis all day. I like that guy. UFC 309 has another prelim for you, and this one features Charlie the Cannibal Campbell. Okay, 2-0 in the UFC, 9-2 professionally, but he takes on one of the most anticipated prospects, Mauricio Ruffi, who is 10-1. He's from the Fighting Nerds Gym. Okay, the Fighting Nerds Gym, Kyle Barralo, Gene Silva, Carlos Prates, absolute killers out of Brazil. This dude's debut over Jamie Mullarkey was a nasty. Like, he looked leagues above Jamie Mullarkey going to that round 2 TKO. I've been waiting for him to get another fight book. The Fighting Nerds is probably my favorite MMA gym. Whenever Carlos Prates at welterweight, Gene Silva at featherweight, you got Mauricio Ruffi here at lightweight, Kyle Barralo at middleweight. Whenever those guys are fighting, I am picking them. Charlie Campbell, you got some knockout power in your kid, but you ain't going to have any for, my gosh, Mauricio Ruffi. I'm mind blanking a lot here. And finally, final fight that's been announced. This one's for UFC 310 on the prelims at that Las Vegas, Nevada final pay-per-view of the year. We still don't know the main event. We'll have to see. This one, the number 13th ranked flyweight, Cody Durden, takes on the unranked Joshua Van. Joshua Van suffering his first UFC defeat not too long ago at the hands of Charles Johnson, but recently picked up a huge win at the Sphere on short notice against Edgar Cherez in a very entertaining fight. He'll be taking on Cody Durden, who most recently retired Matt Schnell in dominant fashion. He also holds a win over Charles Johnson, the only man to beat him, and Jake Hadley, he became the first man to beat. So Cody Durden, you know, he has a very, very confusing style. You know, he really likes to grapple, but occasionally he'll get some hands. As for Joshua Van, we know it's the boxing, but he also has been showing he can grapple at times when he needs to. I'm excited for this one. I'm really torn on this one, but I am a Joshua Van fan, as we are both, and October 10th, so actually in about 2 days, he's going to be turning 23, so I mean only a year separates us, so I gotta root for that kid. He's been so entertaining and I love watching him fight, but it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting seeing what really takes place there, but I'm excited for it. Some other rumors, if you will, if you want to hear about some stuff. Justin Gaethje wants to return in March of 2025, and I know a lot of people have been speculating who he could fight, and I really think him versus Dustin Poirier in a retirement fight would be good. I think both those guys have kind of reached the end of their careers, and you know, having one last BMF trilogy fight would be absolutely amazing. I really hope that's the case. So, we'll have to see there, but, what else do we got here? Yotopura. That's the only one I'm going to cover. Some of these other ones, they just don't have as much legitimacy with these claims. Like, you got Yotopura saying that he wants to fight Islam Makhachev next fight. I don't really want to hear any of that. I like set fights. I like fighters actually saying when they want to return against a realistic opponent. So, yeah, those are your new fights. Let me know who you guys think are going to beat, who are going to win those matchups. But I'm excited for Mauricio Ruffi. That's for certain. Joshua Van, love him. And even Holton made it. Even though he's a grappler, I still rock with his style. That's just me personally, though. Something fun that I enjoy personally is also professional wrestling. I know some people here, they're like, oh, it's fake, oh, it's dumb. But let me just tell you, it has some really cool storylines. And recently, this past weekend, you had an event called Bad Blood. It was absolutely fantastic. I was able to catch a bit of it here and there. 16,902 WWE fans packed the State Farm Arena in Atlanta, Georgia, home of Cody Rhodes, your WWE champion. And it was pretty interesting. I was able to catch the first matchup, all of it. That was CM Punk versus Drew McIntyre in a Hell in a Cell match. They went 31 minutes and 25 seconds. And this has completely taken over the sports world. This has completely taken over everything. My mom sent me a link this morning like, hey, did you see this? I was like, of course I saw this. They had one of the most bloody WWE matches in years. It was violent. It was great. It was a five-star match. Okay, it was a five-star match. And both of these guys, CM Punk's definitely past 40. Drew's either at 40 or pushing 40. They are in fantastic shape. And they're still getting it done. It was great to see. Great spots in this. The storytelling was on point. And this feud, it's been going on all year, and it's finally culminated. It's finally over. I'll be interested to see where both these guys go after here, because kind of everyone has their own feuds right now. So I don't know if we take a back burner to both these guys to give them a bit of a break. All I know is Drew McIntyre had staples down his entire skull. I mean, his head got split wide open. I'm pretty sure Punk has some like gashes on his face. It was phenomenal. This was the best match of the night, and it opened the night. It should have been the main event. They were on the poster for the event, and yet they were opening. It made no sense, but I kind of see why they did once we'll get to the main event, but this was phenomenal. Everyone loved this. Next up, you had a WWE Women's Championship match, okay? Two of the five matches on this card were women's title matches, and the first one, Nia Jax versus Bayley, it was mediocre at best. I mean, I had seen the exact same match at SummerSlam not but 2 months ago. Nia Jax wins just under 15 minutes. I mean, it was that. And this feud just needs to end, okay? Tiffany Stratton, she's Money in the Bank. She's from Prior Lake, Minnesota. She's the hottest woman right now in professional wrestling. And Tiffany Stratton, they just need to put the belt on her. And I think they're building up to her versus Charlotte at WrestleMania, potentially. But they've just been teasing Tiffany Stratton cashing in. I think she's got to cash in sooner rather than later, because Bayley has lost all hype. After winning the championship at WrestleMania, she just lost all of her hype. And Nia Jax, she's been a great filler champ, but we're just waiting for Tiffany Stratton to cash in her belt. This was just okay, and if anything, it was just they knew they were not going to be able to follow CM Punk versus Drew McIntyre, but the only issue is they were never really able to follow CM Punk versus Drew McIntyre the entire evening, which was kind of tragic, because after that, Damian Priest versus Finn Balor, and this one was just confusing. I never really understood this feud and the direction it was taking, because you have this huge turn of Finn Balor turning against Damian Priest, costing him the World Heavyweight Championship. And you would think they would want to extend this feud, but no, Finn Balor just continuously gets his butt whooped by Damian Priest, and here they finally have a singles match. The entire Judgment Day, which is the group Finn Balor is a part of, you know, that Damian Priest used to be a part of before they kicked him out, they're all getting interfered, they're all getting involved in this matchup, and Damian Priest just keeps beating them all, and then he pins Finn Balor clean. And that was that, and it's kind of like, okay, was this just a filler feud? Is this, it doesn't feel like it can continue. Okay, because there's a very run-of-the-mill formula for professional wrestling. If you follow the Drew McIntyre CM Punk feud, you'll see it. First off, they had a lot of build-up for that. They had CM Punk costing Drew McIntyre over and over. They had Drew McIntyre taunting CM Punk. Then they fight for the first time, or wrestle if you want to say it like that. And the villain, Drew McIntyre, wins. The heel wins. Then they have a second match, the face, CM Punk wins, and then whether it be the face, whether it be the heel, usually the face, they win the third matchup. That's a perfect feud right there. The best feud of 2024, if you will. This, I mean, it's just Damian Priest who gets his championship opportunity cost, and then Finn Balor, the man who cost him it, just continuously loses to him. So it didn't really make sense. Okay match, and like I said, no one had recovered from that CM Punk Drew McIntyre matchup. No one had recovered. They were still just buzzing from how amazing that was, and just nothing could really be fixed here. Nothing could really be fixed here. Priest, you know, controlling the match early. Ballard, you know, he has speed and agility even for his age. They're doing this. Big moment, you know, Priest hit him with a powerbomb on the apron, which looked kind of painful. Carlito, JD McDonough were the ones interfering. He takes them out. Baylor did hit his finisher, the Coup de Grace, twice, and Priest kicked out both of those times. And then, you know, he catches Balor on the third attempt, and then he hits his finisher, which is essentially a choke slam, and that was that. So it was okay. It was like, I feel like this could have been the main event of Monday Night Raw. It didn't feel like a PLE event, and I'm just going to repeat it again and again. You just could not follow CM Punk versus Drew McIntyre. Like, everyone was aware nothing was going to follow that. That was a WrestleMania main event quality matchup. Perfect right there. After that, we had a doozy. Okay, we had a doozy. And after that, for some reason, For some reason, Triple H had been teasing a major announcement to shake the very fabric of WWE. You know, Triple H comes out and he's doing all of his stuff. People love Triple H. I love Triple H. And of course, they're going to Crown Jewel next month. And Crown Jewel is essentially the Saudi Arabia show, which is notoriously, if you follow WWE, not usually the best. And they always do wacky things there. And this year, the major announcement that Triple H made was that they were going to have the reigning men's and women's world champions face each other, okay? The world titles won't be up for grabs in both those matches, but the respective winners will be named Crown Jewel Champion and will be giving a Crown Jewel belt. And they revealed this belt, and it's just this huge-looking green thing that just says Crown Jewel Champion. Okay, that means Cody Rhodes versus Gunther, however you want to pronounce it, the World Heavyweight Champion, WWE Champion, not for the belt. Then you have Liv Morgan, who we're going to talk about in a second, taking on Nia Jax, okay? Nothing's on the line for either of those, all right? Nothing's on the line. It's just there. It's just there. After that, Gunther comes out, and, you know, he's saying that he's confident he's going to win this. And then Gunther notices none other than WWE Hall of Famer Goldberg, all right? The notorious Goldberg sitting ringside. He was in attendance with his son, Gage, actually, who is a linebacker for the Colorado football team, you know, Deion Sanders' team. Gunther, he basically insults Goldberg's parenting skills, which is kind of funny. Goldberg hops the barricade. Mind you, Goldberg is over 50. He might be 60 years old, I kid you not. And he confronts Gunther. Then security and WWE officials have to separate Goldberg from Gunther. And then Sami Zayn, who's actually going to be facing Gunther for the World Heavyweight Championship tonight on Monday Night Raw with Joe, I wonder what's going to happen. He arrives and he attacks Gunther, and the segment ends with Goldberg warning Gunther, "You're next." And it just moved no needles. Goldberg versus Gunther will be a squash match. Okay, we do not need Goldberg still in the ring at all. I even think that Goldberg's son Gage realized that. Go play football this past weekend. My goodness. I don't know what's going on with all this, but it's kind of a mess. Triple H, I like these trying to do these different things, but they've never been able to hit with these Saudi Arabia shows. Like, it is, they're just always so predictable, and usually it's Goldberg winning the belt. You got, when Bray Wyatt was around, The Fiend, you know, the biggest heel in the company, the biggest star, they had him losing. You've had Shawn Michaels come out of retirement to take on The Undertaker, Kane, with Triple H in just a squash match. You've had the 50-man Royal Rumble, which was an absolute disaster, just took way too long. Nothing's really been able to hit here, and I just don't really see this hitting either, but maybe it'll be a good matchup. That's all we can really root for. It'll be interesting to see Gunther and Cody Rhodes fight, but at the same time, like, why do I want to see them fight without the belt on the line? And someone actually brought up, since winning the WWE Championship, Cody Rhodes has defended it twice against AJ Styles, once, I think, against Logan Paul, and then actually against Solo Sikoa, and other than that, he's been in two tag team matches. And this is yet another gimmick match where he's not going to be defending the belt, which is just kind of goofy if you ask me. Interesting stuff, I suppose, but it was whatever. It was absolutely whatever. After that, we then had the singles match for the Women's World Championship, where Dominic Mysterio, who is Liv Morgan's little lover boy, was suspended above the ring in a shark cage as she defended her championship against Rhea Ripley. And this was the fourth match of the evening, and still, even after this announcement, after everything, you just could not recreate what CM Punk and Drew McIntyre did. Like, it was just a lingering feeling where it's like, I would have rather just watched that. I would have paid for a ticket just to watch that Hell in a Cell match. It was phenomenal. So, the stipulation for this match was that Dominic Mysterio was suspended in the air in a shark cage. That's that. Other than that, normal match. Morgan, you know, she's essentially targeting Rhea Ripley's injured left knee or something, you know, hitting all sorts of stuff on it. Rhea Ripley's able to overcome it. And by the way, this used to be the hottest feud in the WWE. This used to be the hottest feud, but no longer, okay? During the match, Mysterio, he's able to unlock the shark cage, but his foot gets caught and he's left hanging from the cage. I don't know if it was planned or something, but it was pretty comical watching him hang there. Pretty funny. Then, you know, Rhea Ripley, she hits her finisher on Liv Morgan in the ring, but then instead of pinning Liv Morgan to win back her championship, she sees Mysterio hanging from the cage, and then she goes and attacks him with the kendo stick, which makes me actually kind of think it might have been planned, and then she just is repeatedly beating him like a piñata, and then Rhea Ripley, as she goes to get back, is attacked by Raquel Rodriguez, who returns after a 7th month hiatus. The attack resulted in the match being called off, with Ripley winning by disqualification, but championships can't change hands via counter disqualification in the WWE, and Liv Morgan retains the Women's World Championship. And the issues with this is, you know, this was a singles match, and the stipulation is essentially, there's just someone above you in a little cage. Actually, He also wasn't even in the octagon. He was like off to the side, like in the entryway. And Raquel Rodriguez, I don't even know who that is. She returns and no one reacts. So it's like when you get a big return in their mind and no one reacts, that is such a killer for the WWE. And it just didn't move the needle at all. And now I don't even know what you do. What do you do, Raquel Rodriguez versus Rhea Ripley? I guess you do that. And then you have Liv Morgan versus Nia Jackson going up to Crown Jewel. It just all feels like filler feuds. I don't know what's going on, but just nothing. Just absolutely nothing. But then we got to the second best moment of the night, which was, of course, the tag team match. Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns teaming up to take on Solo Sikoa and Jacob Fatu of the Bloodline. And this was fun. I actually missed this. Unfortunately, I was watching UFC with my boys, and we were about to go out for the night. So I was unfortunately unable to see this. But, you know, I was able to catch some clips, and they had some great returns in this and some great moments. So, I mean, the main event, of course, Cody Rhodes, your undisputed WWE champion, Roman Reigns, are taking on Solo Sikoa and Jacob Fatu of the Bloodline. This has been a years-long feud. This feud has just been going on for 4 years now. It's been absolutely amazing, and it just worked out great. You got Cody Rhodes, Jacob Fatu starting off the match. Despite early offensive flurry from Rhodes that included a big disaster kick, Fatu brushes it off, you know, no worse for wear. Then Roman Reigns and Solo Sikoa get tagged in, and they begin a physical exchange. I mean, that used to be Roman Reigns' boy, and Solo Sikoa has just been trashing him over and over and over. Then Roman Reigns is beginning to gain the upper hand. Jacob Fatu interferes to give the Bloodline the advantage. Then, you know, a number of attacks after that. Cody Rhodes begins to kind of get some momentum going. But right before Cody Rhodes can hit his finisher, Solo Sikoa provides a distraction that allows Fatu to hit a crazy pop-up Samoan drop on Rhodes, kind of like a powerbomb, and then Fatu and Sikoa isolate Rhodes from Reigns for a lengthy beatdown. Cody Rhodes, you know, he finally escapes, gets the big old hot tag, the crowd's going crazy for Roman Reigns, and then Sikoa is able to kick out of a crazy crucifix pin. I mean, Roman Reigns did like some acrobatic stuff, hops up on his back, grabs one arm, wraps his legs around his other arm, puts him down, pins him, almost gets it. It was very cool. See, it's like when John Cena will randomly do acrobatic stuff. It just doesn't look natural, but it's funny to see. Where are we after that? Then Roman Reigns hits a Superman punch on Sikoa. He's about to hit his spear, and then Fatu interferes. Then Fatu, Sikoa, they're hitting a series of super kicks on Reigns, and then they hit a crazy jump up moonsault slash top rope splash combo. But Cody Rhodes breaks up the pinfall just in time. Crowd was buzzing. Rhodes is recovered. He's brawling with Fatu. Then Fatu is sent over the ringside barricade. Very crazy moment right there. Eventually, Fatu, he's beating up Rhodes after saluting Roman Reigns. Cody Rhodes hits a huge top rope splash on Fatu once they're back in the octagon. And actually, not the octagon. I keep saying that. The ring. And it goes. They go outside to the Spanish announce table. I mean, this was just utter chaos from the clips I was seeing. And then out comes Tama Tonga and Tonga Loa, your WWE Tag Team Champions, part of the Bloodline, and they're distracting Roman Reigns, and Sikoa is about to hit a spear on Reigns, but just as he's about to, none other than Jimmy Uso returns. Jimmy Uso is back, saves Roman Reigns, and they have a great moment where they embrace in the ring. Jimmy Uso back after 6 months. This allows Reigns to hit the spear on Sikoa and get the pinfall. Then, I mean, Reigns and Jimmy, they're embracing as Rhodes enters the ring. And then after sharing a word with Cody Rhodes, Roman Reigns leaves the ring with the Usos. And then right after, Cody Rhodes was jumped by the Bloodline. And Reigns and Uso, they think about it. They're like, should we go save Cody Rhodes? Should we do it? And they get back in and they help fight off the Bloodline. And as Rhodes, Reigns, and Uso are standing tall in the ring, none other than The Rock's music hits. Oh my goodness. Dwayne Johnson back. A surprise appearance. He comes out with his Brahma Bull Championship and he stares down Roman Reigns, Cody Rhodes, and Jimmy Uso from the entranceway. And without saying anything, The Rock counted to three and made a throat slash gesture before leaving. He's not happy that Roman Reigns and Jimmy Uso were teaming with Cody Rhodes and that they went and saved them from Jacob Fatu and Solo Sikoa. After the event, The Rock was cutting an insane promo on Instagram Live. I mean, I went back and watched it. He was on absolute fire. He was talking up to security. This felt all improvised. And he was just going off on all things. He had this crazy, this funny moment where he was walking past like the WWE trucks outside. And he sees Cody Rhodes' dad, Dusty Rhodes, on one. And he's like, I love you, man, but I hate your son. And then he turns and it's a picture of John Cena. He's like, eat your Fruity Pebbles, boy. That's a callback to their 2012 feud. Crazy stuff right there. Then we go to something which I'm so glad Triple H is doing, is that you have just the fans. You just have fan footage of this outside the State Farm Arena showing Cody Rhodes. He's about to enter his tour bus, about to prepare for the post-show press conference, when Kevin Owens, who's been his friend for the last 2 years, attacks attacks him in an argument. Security and WWE officials were able to separate him, and then Triple H tweets like some addressing things, stating that this will be handled internally. I love what they're doing here. They're honestly, this feud is just cooked so much, and I'm excited to see where it goes. Crown Jewel feels like King and Queen of the Ring, such a filler pay-per-view, but we're building up to the massive Survivor Series War Game. It's gonna be Bloodline rules. I have no idea what's gonna go on, but you're gonna get The Rock coming back and stuff. There were some highs here, there were some lows. It kind of felt like this show started with a huge bang, mid, then you get a big finale to it. So, I mean, if the show starts good and ends good, you know, you can't really complain. But when you kind of look at the middle, it just wasn't that good. But I will say, Punk, McIntyre, 5-star classic in the main event. So much fan service. Such a great time there. WWE more red hot than ever. I can't believe I forgot to drop my predictions. We forgot to do our predictions for this last week. But I figured might as well cover it. Nonetheless, something else that I feel I should cover is the top 10 new things in pop culture. Every week, guys, you know, we got to check on top 10 new things coming at you in pop culture. And we've had some very interesting stuff going on. Alrighty, starting off with number one, Martin Scorsese says he has no plans to retire from filmmaking. He says, and I quote, "I'm not saying goodbye to cinema at all. I still have more films to make." He's actually currently working on a Jesus movie while his Frank Sinatra biopic is postponed. Absolutely love Jesus. Like you, Martin Scorsese, you're one of the best, directors, creators, whatever you want to, best filmmakers out there. Love me a little Martin Scorsese, my bad. Number two, the idea for Joker 2 ultimately came from a dream that Joaquin Phoenix once had, that he said. And there's actually been a lot of talk about Joker 2, including the fact that it has earned less money than Morbius in its opening weekend. Joker 2, I've heard, is an absolute failure. I've actually learned the ending, and it is one of the dumbest comic book endings ever. You know, all creators are in an uproar. And when everyone's in agreement that a movie sucks, it's just not going to do well. So Joker 2, an absolute failure. Can't create the magic of the first movie from what everyone's been saying. It's unfortunate to see, but it should have been expected. They're making this a musical. They're trying to talk about mental health way more than they should. It's the Joker. He's like the definition of the most evil villain ever. It's its own adaption, but it's nowhere near Heath Ledger's Joker. Number three, Ella Purnell tells us she hasn't seen any scripts for Fallout Season 2 and doesn't know when it will begin filming yet. She said, "I'm excited. I really want to get going, getting back into the Lucy headspace." And she was amazing as Lucy in Fallout. Fallout, one of the more surprising series. Watching it every episode, you're kind of like, okay, I got to watch the next. Okay, I got to watch the next. What? This is the ending cliffhanger. What? It was amazing. I'm excited for Fallout Season 2. But it's looking like it's not coming until 2026. 2025 is some absolute heaters, but a lot of stuff is not going to be coming out until 2026, unfortunately. Number four, Will Smith is in talks to star in Fast and Loose with Michael Bay in talks to direct. The film follows a man who wakes up with no memories but soon learns he's been living two lives. One is a crime kingpin and the other is an undercover CIA agent. This sounds like every Michael Bay and Will Smith movie ever made. I'm not that intrigued. Not to be rude, I'm not that intrigued. It's whatever. Number five, I think we're on number five. Todd Phillips says the cutscene of Lady Gaga's Harley Quinn kissing a woman in Joker 2 was improvised. Gaga stopped and did this thing, and it just kind of got in the way of the moment. What? What in the world, Lady Gaga just kissing extras on set? I don't want to hear none of that. What a weird movie. What a weird Joker 2. Just all I see is just weird stuff over and over and over with that film. Number six. I always lose count. I really should make a little checklist or something. Number six, Francis Ford Coppola on why he named Aubrey Plaza's character WoW Platinum in Megalopolis. "I met a southern young lady who told me her great-grandmother was so beautiful that her name evolved as WoW. I asked if she had a picture of her. A while later, I heard back from her and she attached a photo of a painting. And when I looked at it, I said, wow." Yeah, I was seeing some clips from that Megalopolis movie, which is supposed to be the greatest movie of all time ever made, and it looks horrendous. It actually looks like one of the worst movies that I've ever seen. It was pretty comical to a point at just how weird the scenes were. And just Adam Driver's in it. It was an absolute stud, and they just completely butchered it. I'm sorry, Francis Ford Coppola. Your movie looks like it sucks, but I guess I'd have to see the full scene before I fully judge you. Number seven, The Franchise, a comedy series about the chaos of making a superhero movie, premieres tonight on HBO and Max. And I was actually debating watching it, but then I elected to start watching Reacher, which has been absolutely amazing. I cannot wait to review Reacher season one and then season two. But this series, this franchise show, I kind of want to watch. It has the actor who played Zemo in the MCU. They got him in that, and he's one of my favorite actors. You also have, who's one of the, I believe, main superheroes in the film, who are just an actor. He was in The Beekeeper as a villain, and I believe he was also in You, season 5 or 4, maybe? I don't know. I know he was in the Beekeeper movie as a villain of some regard, but he's super funny, and you got all sorts of other actors in this. But the franchise, I'm going to have to give it a go. Certainly something that I can just turn on whenever. Count me in. Where should we go with? Number eight, do we have anything? Beetlejuice 2 has passed 400 million worldwide. Wow. Wow, I never saw the first Beetlejuice. I have not seen the second Beetlejuice. Just have not watched that at all. But hey, 400 million, congratulations. Number nine, Megalopolis earns 1 million in the film's second domestic weekend, a 75% drop. The budget was 120 million. I don't know if they've crossed even 20 million. This has been one of the biggest flops. And another flop for you at number 10, Joker 2 will need $450 million to break even. The film currently has 121 million. So it is in need of something very big, very, very big. I don't know if it's going to be able to do it. We're going to have to see. But you're certainly not getting a Joker 3. I can promise you that. With the state of all, you know, all of this, I just do not see them making a Joker 3. Okay, especially with all the negative reviews, because I'm getting all my information from the critics online. I don't really know any of the specific names. I think Straw Hat Goofy, Soups, you know, the super popular ones, even a bunch of other creators I recognize on TikTok and Instagram. They're all just trashing it. And when they trash it, you know, it makes me kind of realize, okay, should I go see this? Should I not go see this? And the impact they have is I was not sold at all on Dune 2. And all I saw was Dune 2 is the greatest film ever. Dune 2 is the greatest film ever. I saw it. It turned out to be one of the greatest films ever. So listen to them. They actually have some pretty valid opinions. But that's all we got for new news in pop culture. But now I'm excited to get into the favorite, one of my favorite things to talk about every single week, and that is a recapping of the recent NFL week. And we recently had week 5 of the NFL. Predictions wise, did not go so hot. Did not go hot at all. Do I ever want to recap how many I got correctly? Let me actually see this. I got 1, 2. Okay, I got 2 correct. I got 3 correct. All right, we got the Bears game correct. We missed on that one. The Commanders at 4. We got that one. Did the Ravens beat the Bengals? No, didn't the Bengals beat the Ravens? I'm pretty sure. So, Raiders lost to the Broncos. 49ers lost. The Seahawks lost to the Giants. That was crazy. Packers beat the Rams. Did they? Didn't the Packers beat the Rams? Honestly, I'm actually kind of forgetting all the results of this. I'm going to have to double check all this. They did. So, 5. And then I think I only have like 5 or 6 predictions correct, guys. It is absolutely rough out here. But we're back. We'll be back next week, like I said. But yeah, let's do a little recap, talk about all the action, top fantasy performers as well, because we had a lot of big games, and we kicked it off with one of the best Thursday night football games I've ever seen in my life. Okay, this was legit and such an entertaining game. I was totally surprised with this. Falcons taking on the Buccaneers. Falcons win in overtime, 36-30. Incredible. Falcons 2-game win streak, currently 3-2 atop the NFC South. Buccaneers 3-2 now in second. Very, very interesting. Top fantasy performers, Baker Mayfield in the loss, 23.4, Mike Evans 23.2, and Caleb McLaughlin, the kicker, 16. But it's, oh man, it's the Falcons, baby. Kirk Cousins, 35.36 fantasy points. Drake London, 33.4, and Darnell Mooney, 31.4. Insane. And this was a comeback effort, guys. This was a comeback effort. So we start off the first quarter. I mean, you're getting 2 touchdowns in the first half. It's 10-7 heading into the second quarter. You then get 3 touchdowns combined from both teams. It was honestly such an entertaining start to the game. It's 24-13 heading into halftime. Then turns into 24-16. Then turns into 27-16. Then turns into 27-27, I believe it was. Then we get 30-27, and then Young Hoku to send it to overtime. 52-yard game tying field goal. Insane. And then Kadrill Hodge catches a 45-yard pass from Kirk Cousins. Burns him to the house, and the Falcons win. Incredible fashion. Falcons looking absolutely phenomenal here, rallying. They do still have a minus point differential, 111-115, but this team is finally finding their groove. Stats for the Buccaneers: Baker Mayfield, 180 yards, 19 for 24, 3 touchdowns. Honestly, not too bad of a day. Might still be the number one fantasy QB. Rashad White, 72 yards. Bucky Irving, 44. Baker Mayfield rushed for 42 yards. This was done through the passing. Chris Godwin, 5 catches, 64 yards. Mike Evans, 5 catches, 62 yards, 2 touchdowns. Sterling Shepard actually caught 1 touchdown on his 1 catch for the game. Good job for him. But it was Atlanta. The biggest studs, I mean, Kirk Cousins, this is why you pay him the money. This is why Kirk Cousins went to Atlanta. This is why I somewhat miss him, even though we're undefeated. 42 for 58, 509 yards, 4 touchdowns, 1 interception. They only ran the ball 18 times this game. Bijan, 12 rushes for 61. Ty Allgeier, 6 rushes for 12. Drake London, 12 catches, 154 yards, a touchdown. Insane. Darnell Mooney, 9 catches, 105 yards, 2 touchdowns. Kyle Pitts, 7 catches, 88 yards. Ray McLeod, 6 catches, 66 yards. Kadrill Hodge, 2 catches, 67 yards, 1 touchdown. Insane effort from the Falcons. They looked extraordinary here. The Falcons looked absolutely extraordinary here. And the Buccaneers, man, no hate. This is a divisional matchup. These two will be matched up sooner rather than later. But I'm excited for it. Next week, Falcons will be taking on the Panthers. Divisional matchup, but I mean, it's the Panthers. They should probably get that done, if I'm being honest. And that's just how I view it. I mean, Panthers, we're going to talk about them later, but they kind of had an off week. As for the Bucs, they will be taking on the Saints next week, so a lot more divisional action coming at you. After that, we went to London for 8:30 in the morning. I was able to catch the second half because I was recovering from my amazing Saturday evening as the Jets took on the Vikings, and the Vikings won 23-17. Jets, 2-3 now, 2-game losing streak. They're second in the AFC East. As for the Vikings, 5-0. Oh, yeah. 139 points for 76 points against the number one team in the NFC North and in the league. You got to be kidding me, baby. I was so hyped for this. Now, okay, we'll talk about fantasy real quick. Garrett Wilson, 29.1 fantasy points. The only notable thing for the Jets, Garrett Wilson, absolute stud. Minnesota defense, 18 points. Will Reichard, 16 fantasy points. Justin Jefferson, 15. Do want to say we start off the game 17-0. Okay, do want to say we start out the game 17-0. Gave up another touchdown 2 weeks now with 30 seconds left in the second quarter. They then bring it to 17-10 and head into the fourth. Then Will Reichard hits a little 53-yard field goal, 20-10. Garrett Wilson catches a touchdown pass from Aaron Rodgers, bring it to 20-17. We get a little field goal in with 3 minutes left, and then thankfully our defense comes up big. But man, I thought we were going to. Our defense just starts that game so hot. They usually save us at the end, but I mean, yeah, another game where we almost lost right at the buzzer. Aaron Rodgers not looking good. All right, 29 out of 54. That's insane. They only ran the ball 14 times. Breece Hall, 23 yards rushing. Brendan Allen, 13. 244 yards passing, 2 touchdowns, 3 picks for Aaron Rodgers. We own your ass. All right, Aaron Rodgers, we own your ass in Minnesota. You already know. Garrett Wilson, 13 catches, 101 yards, touchdown, had a day. Alan Lazard, 4 catches, 34 yards, touchdown. He had a good day. Tyler Conklin, 6 catches, 50 yards. Good for you, Conklin. Good for you. As for Minnesota, Sam Darnold, 179 yards and 1 pick. So not the hottest game. Ty Chandler, 14 rushes for 30 yards. Aaron Jones got hurt, which we hate to see. CJ Ham actually punched in a touchdown. JJ, 6 catches, 92 yards. Aston, 3 catches, 36 yards. Yeah, it was a defensive day. Vikings, it's all our defense, all right? Number one defense in the league. You already know. That's just what we do. We get to bye week next week, though, which I'm actually happy about. We'll be taking on the Lions next time out, which should be a tough matchup. They just had a bye, so, you know, we'll be matching up in 2 weeks with them. But great win for us. We're 5-0. If the Chiefs lose, we're actually officially the only undefeated team, which would be astounding, utterly astounding. As for the Jets, losses to the Broncos and Vikings last two games, it's been embarrassing. We'll take on the Bills on Monday Night Football next week. It's been abysmal. It's been abysmal if you're a Jets fan. Sorry, not sorry. I could care less. After that, another heater. I mean, these games. Great games this week. You had some snoozers, but you also had some great games. This one, Ravens and Bengals. Remember how I said I thought the Bengals won? No, the Ravens won. That's why I knew I had 6 correct picks. 41-38 in overtime. The fantasy scoring here was off the frickin' wall. Off the frickin' wall. Current state of the AFC North. Ravens 3-2 on a 3-game winning streak. Bengals 1-4. Yikes. I forgot about that. Bengals are 1-4 despite having scored 140 points on the season. For the Ravens, Lamar Jackson, 33.42 fantasy points. Zay Flowers, 19. Derrick Henry, 16.6. As for the Bengals, I played him in three leagues, guys. I played this man in three leagues. Ja'Marr Chase, 41.3. Oh, my goodness. Joe Burrow, 34.78. And T. Higgins, I did have him in a league, 29.3, doing the best that he could. Scoring galore in this one. And this one, it was actually a pretty close first half, 16-14. Heading into halftime, you had two touchdowns for each team, including a safety, all right? That's right, the Bengals got a safety. Then two touchdowns in the third quarter. Then the fourth quarter, two touchdowns from the Bengals, two touchdowns from the Ravens, and Justin Tucker to send it to overtime with a 56-yard field goal. Then back and forth all of overtime. Tucker, 3 minutes, 33 seconds after a little turnover, gets the game-winning kick. Electric. Lamar Jackson, 348 yards, four touchdowns, also rushed for 55 yards, put on an MVP performance. Derrick Henry, 92 yards and touchdown, doing pretty decent. Zay Flowers, 7 catches, 111 yards. Rashad Bateman, 4 catches, 58 yards, got a touchdown. Kolar, 3 catches, 64 yards and a touchdown. And Isaiah Likely had 3 catches, 2 of which for a touchdown. Impressive stuff. As for the Bengals, Joe Burrow, 30 for 39, 392 yards, 5 touchdowns, did throw a pick. When it mattered most, it happens. Chase Brown, 46 yards rushing. Wasn't really doing much there. Ja'Marr Chase, 10 catches, 193 yards, 2 touchdowns. T. Higgins, 9 catches, 83 yards, 2 touchdowns. Just such studs. They're all such studs. The Bengals and Ravens always put on some of the best games that I've ever seen. They're always just so entertaining. Ravens going to ride their 3-game win streak into Washington to take on the Commanders next week. Actually, they're hosting them, I should better off say. As for the Bengals, who really need to work out how they're 1-4, all right, they'll be taking on the Giants in New York. That's a winnable game. But yeah, Lamar Jackson having a week. Having a week. I mean, the whole team, Ravens, Bengals, both guys, both teams really performed super well. It was tragic to see. It just came down to whoever just got lucky at the end. Vocally, that was the Ravens. After that, yet another divisional matchup in the AFC as the Jaguars get their first win of the season as they beat the Indianapolis Colts. Colts, yikes, 2-3 now. Kind of awkward, but Jaguars 1-4. How about that? Good work for you guys. Joe Flacco, 27.56 fantasy points. Alec Pierce, 22.4. Trey Sermon, 18.3. Not too bad, Trey. Not too bad. Tank Bigsby for the Jags, 26.9 fantasy points. Brian Thomas Jr., my favorite rookie in the league, 23.2. And Trevor Lawrence, 22.24. Lots of 22.24s. Wow. This game, before the fourth quarter, it was 17-10. All right, it was 17-10 before the fourth quarter. Actually, it was 13-10, I should better off say. It was 14 to, I'm trying to do some little math here. So it was 17-10 for the Jaguars heading into the fourth quarter. In the fourth quarter, you had a combined 5 touchdowns from all the teams, including some huge ones. You had a Brian Thomas Jr. 85-yard touchdown. You had a Tank Bigsby 65-yard touchdown rush. You had an Alex Pierce 65-yard touchdown. And then the game-winning field goal from Cam Little with 17 seconds left. Incredible stuff. Colts and Jaguars both played their hearts out, but the Jaguars really wanted that first win of the year, and they played hard for it. Probably the best backup, probably one of the best quarterbacks in NFL history, Joe Flacco, 359 yards and 3 touchdowns. He's not even the starting quarterback. No Jonathan Taylor, kind of struggled. Trey Sermon, 38 yards rushing and a touchdown. But, he was catching 6 catches. That's how he got all his fantasy points. Josh Downs, 9 catches, 69 yards. Alec Pierce, 3 catches, 134 yards and a touchdown. Impressive stuff there. Even Pittman, 5 catches, got a touchdown. Jacksonville, Trevor Lawrence looking like the number one pick here. 371 yards and 2 touchdowns. Tank Bigsby taking over for the injured Travis Etienne, 101 yards, 2 touchdowns. Brian Thomas Jr., 5 catches, 122 yards and a touchdown. They were all looking like such studs out there. It was incredible. Jags looking pretty good here. Finally got a win. And mind you, as we go through their start to the season, all right, 3-point loss to the Dolphins, 5-point loss to the Browns, 4-point loss to the Texans. They got blown up by the Bills. But other than that, they've all been close. They take on the Bears next week. That'll be a tough battle defensive-wise. But honestly, I think if this team can really string it together like they did here, show the camaraderie, they'll get it done. As for the Colts, you know, Anthony Richardson, no problem, but the Colts have never really had a good defense. It's been a minute since they've had a good defense. Pretty weird that they beat the Steelers and then lose to the Jaguars. That I do find kind of perplexing. Kind of lose to the Packers, beat the Bears situation, but they'll all be back. It'll be interesting. We'll see what happens. After that, Dolphins-Patriots snooze fest here. Let me just tell you that. 15-10. Did we have at least one touchdown yet? Yeah, Alec Ingold got a touchdown with 4 minutes left in the game. And then they actually failed a two-point conversion. What happened to this Miami Dolphins team? They're supposed to be studs this year. Tyreek Hill, 12.9 fantasy points. That's all you can really point out. Ramondre Stevenson for the Pats, 19.2. That's all I got for you. Actually, Ramondre Stevenson punched in a touchdown in the first quarter. Jason Sanders hit a field goal. No scoring until 4 minutes into the third, where he had a series of field goals. Then, yeah, Dolphins punched in a late touchdown. Pretty random. Trevor Huntley, 194 yards and a pick. Looking like a run-of-the-mill backup who just will never be this. You know, he's just not Tua Tagovailoa. He reminds me of, I'm trying to think, kind of like an Alexander Mastin's kind of choppy it up, but Tyron Huntley, whenever he came in, when Lamar Jackson was out, he'd be like such a stud. And now that he's actually the starter somewhere, or, you know, filling in for Tua for the moment, he just can't really get it going. Devin Achane got hurt here. Raheem Mostert came in, 19 rushes, 80 yards. Tyreek Hill, 6 catches, 69 yards. Jonu Smith, 5 catches, 60 yards, doing the most they could. But, I mean, it just came down to the defense. And this Patriots team, they just aren't good. They aren't good. Jacoby Brissett, 160 yards. You know, Ramondre Stevenson, 89 yards a touchdown. He was all right. DeMario Douglas, 6 catches, 59 yards. That's that. You know, there's just not little to love. 1-4, 4-game losing streak for the Pats. At 62 points on the year, just not good. Dolphins, 2-3, finally get a win. They only have 60 points. It's crazy with all their offensive weapons. Only 60 total points on the year. That's actually the worst in the AFC. Scratch that. The Dolphins have the least amount of points in the NFL. Technically the worst offense. They technically have the worst offense in the league. That's insane to me. That's absolutely insane. But good win for the Dolphins. You're tied for second with the Jets. Technically in third, though. Due to the tiebreaker, I guess. Boring game. After that, you know, this one, it was boring. It was boring, but that's not really anyone's fault except the fact the Browns just... Actually, there was a moment where the Browns actually, Deshaun Watson gave up on a fourth down, came back to the sideline. I would not be surprised if they cut Deshaun Watson or trade him. He is just not a good person. Does not have good character. Commanders win 34-13. Jay Atkins of the Browns, the highest fantasy scorer with 11. As for the Commanders, 19.72 from Jaden Daniels, 14 from the defense, 13.8 from Brian Robinson Jr. They're a good team. They're a damn good team. Commanders sitting pretty. Commanders are sitting very pretty, one of the top teams in the league, 4-1 on the year, 155 points for. They're on a 4-game win streak. All right, they're absolutely amazing, plus 40-point differential. I like this team. As for their opponents, the Browns, the second-to-worst team in the AFC North, 1-4, only 79 points on the year, 3-game losing streak. They're not good. Yet to win at home. That's insane. Scoring-wise, I mean, Browns got a field goal in the second, field goal in the third, touchdown with 7 minutes left in the game. It was a blowout just from the get-go. I mean, heading into halftime, it was 24-3. Always kind of dies down in the second half, but guys had their number. Sean Watson, 125 yards and a touchdown, just got nothing done. Jerome Ford and Devontae Foreman both had 9 rushes, 44 yards. Mari Cooper, 4 catches, 60 yards. That's that. As for the Commanders, Jane Daniels, 238 yards, touchdown, and a pick. Did get picked off, sadly. Kind of forgot Marcus Mariota was actually the backup here. Odd. Daniels rushed for 82 yards. He was actually the leading rusher, funny enough. Brian Robinson Jr., though, punched in 2 tutties. Happy for him. Scary Terry, 4 catches, 112 yards. Also had Brown. Oh, I cannot remember Brown's first name. 2 catches, 57 yards, and a touchdown. I'm actually pissed. I cannot remember Brown's last name. But Commanders looking good. 4-1, little 2-3 touchdown win here. Love to see it. Browns, I don't like you guys. I don't like the character on that team. I like this Commanders team, though. I can get behind them. Another noon game for you. Bills and Texans. This one came down to a game-winning field goal from none other than Kymie Fairbairn. 23-20. As the Texans, man, looking good to start the year. 4-1, despite having a minus point differential, courtesy of the Minnesota Vikings. 2-game win streak. CJ Stroud doing what he was put there to do. As for the Bills, Just 3-2, two-game losing streak, 142 points for, 106 points against. The Bills will never make sense. They lose games like this, then they'll go out and win by 40 points next week. That's just how the Bills work. It makes no sense with them. James Cook, 17 fantasy points. Josh Allen, 14.64. The Texans D had them rattled. The Texans defense came to play at home today, shot them down. CJ Stroud, almost 17 fantasy points. Kevin Fairbairn, 16 on the dot. Nico Collins, 15.8, but they get hurt. Nico Collins did not return after halftime, sadly, which sucked because in the first quarter, he had a 67-yard touchdown, which was absolutely insane. And I will give a shout-out, Keelan Coleman, 49-yard touchdown pass, finally got a touchdown. All right, the rookie from FSU finally got a touchdown. Josh Allen, 9 for 30, 131 yards and a touchdown. The D-backs were on lock this game. James Cook, 20 rushes, 80 yards and a touchdown. I mean, Dalton Kincaid, like I said, only 9 completions. They were just held in check. Pretty impressive. Dalton Kincaid, 2 catches, 34 yards. Man, I don't know what happened to this Texans defense. They just locked in this game. CJ Stroud also cooked the Bills, 331 yards, 1 touchdown, 1 pick. Ogunbowale, 15 rushes, 30 yards, and nothing was really going on the run game. Diggs, 6 catches, 82 yards. Dell, 4 catches, 38 yards. Collins, 2 catches, 70 yards, and touchdown. They're good. We knew this. We knew that this team was good. Texans, we'll be interested to see what they do next week. Bills, just, I don't know what's going on with you. You need to figure it out. Jumping over to the NFC, how about the Chicago Bears winning 36-10, manhandling the Panthers? Bears are now 3-2. Mind you, every team in the NFC North is currently positive. Pack is 3-2. Bears are 3-2. Lions are 3-1. Vikes are 5-0. We're coming for the league. All right, the Vikings are coming for the league. Lead the NFC North with us. Bears, 2-game win streak, undefeated at home here with a big win over the Panthers. Panthers sadly fall to 1-4, only 83 points for. But honestly, they're not like that bad. Okay, I was kind of hating on the Panthers with Andy Dalton behind the frame. Chuba Hubbard's been absolutely popping off. They can string wins together. Chuba Hubbard, 17 fantasy points. He was the only real stud for the Panthers. Bears, DJ Moore, 27.5. Caleb Williams, 23.5. And DeAndre Swift, 20. Yeah, they finally got it going. And this game, you know, it started off Chuba Hubbard, 38-yard touchdown, 7-0. Then DJ Moore answered with a 34-yard touchdown. And then the second quarter, Rashawn Johnson touchdown, DeAndre Swift touchdown, DJ Moore touchdown, 28-7. Heading into the second half, honestly, just nothing went well for the Panthers after that. Could never regain their magic. They just had them on lock. Andy Dalton, 136 yards and a pick. Actually got benched for Bryce Young, who came in for 758 yards. Chubb Hubbard, the only positive, 97 yards rushing for 1 touchdown. Deontay Johnson, only 3 catches for 20 yards. Yikes. Caleb Williams, here's your number one pick, 304 yards and 2 touchdowns. Also ran 5 times for 34 yards. There you go. There you go, Caleb. DeAndre Swift, 21 rushing attempts, 73 yards and a touchdown. How about Rashawn Johnson? 10 rushes, 25 yards, 2 touchdowns. Great backup right there. He actually had Baggin even coming in and running the ball. I don't know what was going on there, but Baggin rushed 3 times. Why was Baggin ever rushing? What's going on there? DJ Moore, 5 catches, 105 yards, 2 touchdowns. Romo Dunze, 5 catches, 4 yards. Keenan Allen, 3 catches, 33 yards. Got a lot of weapons out there. They actually also have Gerald Everett. Goodness me. Cole Kmet, 3 catches, 57 yards. Wow. Wow, the Bears receiving corps is actually loaded. Absolutely loaded. Bears, good win here. They'll take on the Jaguars next week. Very winnable game. We'll see what happens there for the Chicago Bears, who I don't actually hate that much. You know, my whole family are Bears fans, so I got to show a little love where I can. You know, I got to give some respect. Panthers, will they finally be at home? Will they finally get a win at home? 0-2 at home, as they will host the Falcons. We already mentioned that. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they're going to beat the Falcons. We'll have to see, but interesting stuff. Chuba Hubbard, DeAndre Swift, do your thing. After that, we got into our 3:30 games as the Broncos took on the Raiders, and Broncos get out of Dodge. Broncos, 3-game win streak, 96 points for, 73 points against. Bo Nix has found the magic, second in the AFC West. Broncos win 34-18. Are you kidding me? Raiders are now the worst team in the AFC West, 2-3. Insane. Brock Bowers, 23.7. Yeah. Yeah, I knew he was going to be good. I've been telling y'all about Brock Bowers. Amir Abdullah, 14. Jacoby Myers, 13. Bo Nix, 23 fantasy points. Javonte Williams, 16. Denver D with 15. Good work, boys. Good work. Game started out 10-0. They would then go on a 34-point unanswered streak until 4 minutes left in the game. Insane. Broncos just strung everything together. You actually had a 100-yard interception from Pat Surtain incredible. Who returned it to the house, might I add. Incredible. Absolutely incredible. This Broncos team finding their magic, doing what they need to. Gardner Minshew, 137 yards, touchdown, two picks, gets benched for Aiden O'Connell, 94 yards and a pick. I think the Raiders might be cooked. Madison, 15 rushes, only 38 yards. Brock Bowers, 8 catches, 97 yards and a touchdown. The only positive for this team. You go, Brock. We knew he was going to be one of the best tight ends of all time. Broncos, baby. Bo Nix, 206 yards, 2 touchdowns. Also ran it a little touchdown. How about that? Javonte Williams, 13 rushes, 61 yards. Also had 5 catches for 50 yards. How about that? Cortland Sutton, only 2 catches for 32 yards. Actually, Josh Reynolds, 1 catch, 9 yards. Caught a touchdown. Good for him. Broncos, I'm actually happy for them. You know, they've been stringing the wins together. We'll see if they can keep this momentum. I don't hate this Broncos team at all. I'll tell you, this Raiders team, though, they are slowly falling apart. Zamir White's a failure. Gardner Minshew's a failure. Devontae Adams is leaving the team. They have a brand new stadium. Not looking good to be a Raiders fan. 4 more games for you fellas. Cardinals and the 49ers. How about a little upset? That's right. The 49ers are in panic mode. I guarantee they are in panic mode. The front office, 2-3 start to the season, yet to win on the road, and they lose at home here to the Cardinals, 24-23. How about the Cardinals? Snapping a little losing streak here. 2-3 now on the year. Kyler Murray, 24 fantasy points. James Conner, 14. As for the 49ers, finally, Brandon Ayuk is doing something. 22.7 fantasy points. George Kittle with 20, doing what they needed to do. This was a huge choke. This was a huge choke by this team. Going into halftime, 24-10. Going into halftime, 24-10. I mean, you had a pick six from this 49ers defense. Jake Moody actually got hurt for the 49ers, their kicker. So Mitch Wisnowski was coming in. Kittle was catching touchdowns. The team was looking great. Then third quarter, you know, just can't really do anything. You know, they allow a field goal. So then, okay, it's 13-24 heading into the fourth quarter. Then Elijah Higgins catches a touchdown pass. They get a two-point conversion. Suddenly, all of a sudden, it's 21-23. The 49ers just cannot get first downs, give the ball away. Chad Ryland kicks a 35-yard field goal to put them up with a minute 37, and they just can't mount a drive. Brock Purdy picked off twice in this game. Kyler Murray, 195 yards, touchdown pick, mediocre day, but did rush for 83 yards and a touchdown. Impressive stuff. Other than that, nothing much really point out. No one really was catching anything at all. Elijah Higgins got a touchdown. There you go. As for 49ers, Brock Purdy, 244 yards, a touchdown, the two picks we mentioned. Jordan Mason held in check, 89 yards rushing, could not get anything going. Ayuk, though, 8 catches, 147 yards. George Kittle, 8 catches, 64 yards, a touchdown. They're the only people that are being passed to. All right, of the 19 completions Brock Purdy made, 16 were to Ayuk and Kittle. Pretty funny. 49ers need to figure it out, but the Cardinals getting a big win here. Kyler Murray finding his groove. We'll have to see. These two are currently tied in the NFC West. And we're going to mention another NFC West team here in a second. But first, let me touch on my Packers, who, this is weird. You know, I'm a Packers hater, but there's something about watching them play the Rams. There's just something about when the Packers play other teams. I'm like, okay, I don't necessarily need you to beat the Packers. Only me, a Viking, needs to beat the Packers. And the Packers here, 24-19 in Los Angeles, beating the Rams. Packers, 3-2 are the worst team in the NFC North. All right, all four NFC North teams are going to be making the playoffs this year. All right, we're taking the top seed, the Vikings. We're filling up all the wild card spots. It's going to be ridiculous here. Okay, as for the Rams, NFC West, man, it is tough going. Tough to be in the NFC West this year. Rams are 1-4, 2-game losing streak, 0-3 on the road, 1-1 at home here. Yikes, they've given up 139 points. Goodness me. Tucker Kraft for the Packers having a breakout game, 24.8 fantasy points. Jordan Love just under 17. Josh Jacobs, 16 points. And as for the Rams, Kyren Williams, 16. You also had Jay Whittingham with 15. Tutu Atwell with 12. Close game. Luckily, you know, Packers were able to hang on to it, I suppose. I could really care less if they win or lose. But Tucker Kraft had 2 touchdowns in the third quarter. So random, including a 66-yarder, which was cool to see. He actually had a pick six from, what's his face, Jalen McLaw on the Rams, which was from the 4-yard line. Jordan Love threw it away, and it was picked off. It was pretty entertaining. But Jordan Love, 224 yards, 2 touchdowns, a pick. Not as good as last week, but does enough to get the job done. Tucker Kraft, 4 catches, 88 yards, 2 touchdowns. Jayden Reed, 4 catches, 78 yards, doing what they need to do. Josh Jacobs, 19 rushes, 73 yards, 1 touchdown. Matt Stafford, 260 yards, a touchdown, and a pick, but it was Kyren Williams, 22 rushes, 102 yards, and a touchdown, who was the stud. Yeah. Rams, oddly one of the worst teams in the league. Oddly one of the worst teams in the league. The Giants are better than the Rams. Oh, my goodness. Actually, statistically, they're just barely better than the Panthers. Barely better. Actually, the Panthers have given up 165 points this year. Never mind. They're not as bad as the Panthers. So don't panic that much, Rams fans. But just know you're kind of in desperate mode. Good win for the Packers. We'll see how they do the rest of the year. I am still a loyal Vikings fan, so I could care less if they win or lose. But there's something about them. Something about them. Final 3:30 game for you as the Giants pull off a shocker in Seattle, winning 29-20. Darius Slayton, 26.2 fantasy points. Daniel Jones, 22 fantasy points. The New York defense, 18 fantasy points. Geno Smith, 22 fantasy points. Decent. Kenneth Walker, 14. Jackson Smith and Jigba, 13. I don't know what happened here. I honestly don't know what happened. They just kind of lost this. They honestly just kind of lost this game. And there was actually this crazy moment where Rashawn Jenkins had a 102-yard fumble return to start off the first quarter. I mean, Seahawks were up 7-0. They then go down 10-7. Then they tie it up 10-10, heading into halftime. Then the third quarter comes around, and just Darius Slayton just could not be contained. Not at all. And we're going into the final quarter, and it's 20-13. And that's 23-3. And then just all of a sudden, Jackson Smith and Jigba gets a touchdown. It's not too bad. Not looking too bad. You know, it's 20 to, I believe, like 23 or something. Then all of a sudden, Bryce Ford Wheaton blocks a field goal to tie the game. And the Giants just hold on to their lead. The defense gets big. Seahawks can't capitalize on any momentum. And they lose. Daniel Jones, 257 yards, 2 touchdowns. Get this. Get this, guys. Singletary out. In for the game is Tracy Jr., 18 rushes, 129 yards. Good job, kid. Passing-wise, Darius Slayton, 8 catches, 122 yards and a touchdown. Vandell Johnson, Robinson, my bad, 6 catches, 36 yards and a touchdown. Doing what they need to do. Giants getting a win here. Good for you. 2-3. Tied for second to last in the NFC. Actually, they are last. Okay, last in the NFC East, but you got 2 wins. You got 2 wins, all right? You don't want to be with 1 win. You're at 2 wins. There you go. As for Seattle, 3-2, NFC West, kind of looking rough. And Seahawks have lost their last 2 weeks after previously starting 3-0. Geno, 284 yards and a touchdown. Actually, rushed 4 times for 72 yards. How about that? Kenneth Walker, 7 catches, 57 yards. Lockett, 4 catches, 75 yards. DK, 4 catches, 50 yards. And my boy Jackson Smith at Jigba, 4 catches with a touchdown. Good stuff there. We'll see how the Seahawks and the Giants can continue momentum from here. But Seahawks really need to assess what's going on as you're on a losing streak. As for the Giants, keep that momentum. Good job, New York. Brian Daboll remains head coach one more week. With that, we get into Sunday Night Football. We need a huge game from CeeDee Lamb. He did not deliver. All right, no deliverance there. Cowboys do get the win, though, 20-17. Cowboys are 3-2, second in the NFC East. Steelers, they have now fallen to second in the AFC North. They're on a little two-game losing streak. Best defense in the league, though. I'll give them that. Actually, I think the Chiefs have the best D currently, but that's about a change. Tolbert, the wide receiver, 21.7 fantasy points. Rico Dowdle, the running back for the Cowboys, 19.4, balling out. Justin Fields for the Steelers, 15 fantasy points. Cameron Hayward, 10. Najee Harris, 9. I mean, just back and forth. Eventually, Tolbert gets a touchdown with 20 seconds left. That was that. This game was delayed due to weather and didn't even get over till midnight. It was utterly ridiculous. Dak, 352 yards, 2 touchdowns, and 2 picks was letting it fly. Dowdle, 20 rushes, 87 yards. Tolbert, 7 catches, 87 yards, and a touchdown. CeeDee Lamb, 5 catches, 62 yards. Just not doing anything. Come on, CeeDee. Why are you wide receiver 3 for this game? Justin Fields, 131 yards and 2 touchdowns. Also rushed for 27 yards. He was okay. Nothing really much. George Pickens held the 3 catches. Pat Freiermuth held the 3 catches. Van Jefferson held the 3 catches. Yeah, Cowboys, this was the Cowboys defense we knew and loved. This is the Cowboys defense that's dropping 20 points, right? I recognize them. They were doing good, just not this game. Not this game for the Steelers. Sadly fallen. Can't really hate, though. Can't really hate too much. Cowboys came to play, finally getting back in the win column. We'll have to see what happens next week, but honestly, I might back the Cowboys for now. We'll have to see. But that is your NFL Week 5 recap. Exciting stuff going down. Exciting stuff going down. I'm excited to see Week 6, and we will be getting our predictions video out later this week. But as for now, guys, I've been buzzing. I've been waiting. UFC 307, your official recap, your review of it, starts right now, and we have a lot to talk about. For starters, I do want to say that this Salt Lake City crowd was absolutely buzzing from the get-go. One of the better crowds of the year, and I've never really doubted this. I've always known that Utah brings the heat, brings the fire when we have these shows. And from the get-go, they were getting after it, and we kicked things off with an absolute bang here as Court McGee, the Utah native we called he would win. I didn't think he'd do it in this fashion, though, as Court McGee gets his eighth career submission, and this time it's in round one. He submits Tim Means in 3 minutes and 19 seconds. Great work right there. Tim Means suffering the eighth career loss by submission in his career. How about that? Numbers don't lie. I mean, from the get-go, 14 significant strikes to 5. Court McGee landed a takedown about 2 minutes in, found his way to the back position, locked it up, and Tim Means tapped right about when he got locked in. I mean, impressive stuff. Nothing much more to say right there. Got it locked in, and when you start the night off with a finish in any regard, it gets the people going. Great win here for Court McGee, especially in Utah. That's going to snap his little losing streak. I knew he'd do it. I freaking knew he would do it. At 39 years old, he's feeling more motivated than ever to keep fighting. I absolutely love that. Truly, truly, I love that. Court McGee, happy to see it. Tim Means, though, 2-fight losing streak now. He's been finished in round one twice in 2024, and he's also sitting at 1-5 in his last 6 since 2022. Yikes, Tim, I don't know how long you're going to be around at this rate. Ugh, kind of a shame. Courts, there's tons of welterweights out there, aging welterweights that you could fight. I'm sure there's got to be someone. Who could we match Tim up with? Tim Means, I don't even know. He might get cut. As for Court, I think Max Griffin is fighting someone coming up. Him versus Max Griffin, I think, could be a little fun fight that you could run right there. I know it's been a while since he fought, I don't even know, Santiago Ponzinibbio, maybe? I don't know. A lot of options out there for Court, but great win in front of his hometown in Utah, home state, I should say. Good stuff there. After that, we got into an issue right off the bat, and this was a recurring thing, which I think everyone can agree with, is the judging was very spotty the entire evening. It was some very spotty judging, okay? And I understand the argument for Tisha Pennington winning. Okay, I understand it. Tisha Pennington taking on Carla Esparza here. And as we look at significant strikes, all right, Tisha Pennington, 80-39. Takedowns, 4 of 7 for Carla, 3 minutes, 40 seconds. But there was really no damage. I didn't really see any damage, and there wasn't even a split decision here, all right? Tisha, I thought, every time I turned this on, this was on the background, we were all playing some poker, and every time I looked up, it just looked like Carla was winning the exchange. I don't even know how the striking got this out of control. Actually, total strikes, 116-94. So total strikes were in favor of Carla Esparza. I thought Carla won round one. I thought round two was pretty close, and I thought round three she did really good in. But yeah, Carla Esparza sadly loses her retirement fight. She'll end her career on a 2-fight losing streak. This one I just didn't think she lost. I just did not think she suffered a defeat here. But at the end of the day, it was a woman's strawweight bout. You can now say that Tisha Pennington is 14-7. Snap a little 2-fight losing streak. And has now had, of her 21 career professional bouts, 19 go to a decision. She's boring as could ever be. Carla got payback later because her wife lost her championship belt. We'll touch on that in a second. But yeah, Tisha Pennington losing my vote of confidence. Just boring. She's just boring as could be. Women's strawweight division, they might give her a ranked opponent. I don't even know. Who could she fight? Give her Karolina Kowalska. I could care less who she fights, if I'm being all honest. Carla Esparza, they paid her a big video package, which was nice, I suppose. I could really care less. Second prelim of the night. Good stuff. There was that. But this was a doozy. But after that, we got the crowd back and buzzing. And this was absolutely electric. This was absolutely electric as Ryan Spann took on Ovince St. Preux and got a round 195 second finish. That's right, Ryan Spann getting a little guillotine choke in 1:35. And how about his 13th career submission? Come on, Ryan Spann, you're an absolute dog here. And look, just from the get-go, going at it, swinging hard, almost dropped him, wrapped him up on the neck. Ryan Spann has this certain technique when he gets a guillotine where he really cranks it to the side, cranks your neck back, really creates pain. Right when he locked it in, Ovince was tapping. This was phenomenal. Ryan Spann now, since 2020, has only been to a decision once. All right? He's only ever been out of round one since 2020 twice. All right? He is one of the most exciting fighters. Does his title run start now? Absolutely not. This is his first win since November 2022. I just want to let you know that. So Ryan Spann avenging his loss earlier in the year of 2024, he'll be ending 2024 on a win. Presumably, I don't think he's going to be fighting again. Ranked opponents-wise at light heavyweight, you know, he could always take on Alonzo Menifield, but I think he just takes the back burner. Let's give him unranked opponents. You know, Ryan Spann, 33 years old, he's still got some time left. Good win here. As for his opponent, Ovince St. Preux, look, Ovince, you're 41 years old. Ovince, it might be time to hang it up. I won't lie. You know, he won earlier this year. Split decision over Kenny and Chukani. But he has gotten win-loss over the last 4 years. Tough goings here and there. But Ovince St. Preux, legend of the game, former title challenger, falls. Ryan Spann, great win, man. Great win. And how about that? Out of Ryan Spann's 30, actually, we won't go 30. Actually, we could go. So out of his 22 career victories, Ryan Spann now has 19 finishes. Okay, holy cow. And out of his 32 professional bouts, 26 have been finishes. He's either been finished or gotten finished. So Ryan Spann, very exciting fighter. Happy for him. Next up on the docket, another interesting case of, you know what, I picked Cesar Almeida, so I was biased in this, so I'm not a good representative of this. But, you know, all the judges had it 30-27. Cesar Almeida had so many eye pokes and nut shots on Iyer Proterra, it actually was getting ridiculous. It was actually getting ridiculous. Like, it was just like, are you kidding me? And the ref, Dave Sagistad, didn't ref another fight. I mean, the broadcast was calling about, Twitter was calling about, national TV was calling about, for goodness sakes. They just weren't feeling him. But Cesar Almeida, you know, outstruck him 23-16 round one, defended 1 of 4 takedowns, only got 58 seconds of control time against them. Round two, you know, outstruck him 22-10, suffered 2 takedowns, but yet oddly reversed it. Actually, got a little guillotine submission attempt in. Round three, Iyer Proterra outstruck him, but, you know, it just looked like Cesar Almeida was getting the better of the exchanges. He gets the win here. I mean, nothing much more to say. There's so many eye pokes in this fight. It was ridiculous and nut shots. Cesar Almeida, 6-1. This is now the second time he's gone a decision in his career. Scratch that, third time he's gone a decision, interestingly enough. Good stuff. Good stuff for you, Caesar. I don't really know what to say. Kind of boring, but I mean, you know, debuted in 2024. He's gone 2-1 since joining. Gets a win. Iyer Proterra, 2-fight losing streak. 1-4 in his last 5. 2-6 in the UFC. I don't know how much longer he's going to be around. But for, you know, trying to match make middleweights, you know, you can always do Cesar Almeida versus Kevin Holland. I don't even know. Cesar Almeida, a lot of options. Maybe Andre Petrovsky, have him fight a grappler. I honestly care less. Gets the job done. I picked it. There you go. After that, lightweight matchup here. Alexander Hernandez, Austin Hubbard, and kind of just a string of decisions. Just kind of went through a little string of decisions. Hernandez getting this one done by a split decision. Chris Lee, 30-27 to Austin Hubbard. The other two seeing at 29-28. And look, this came down to, are you going to reward, you know, takedown defense, or you're not going to reward? And Austin Hubbard went 0-12 on takedown. So thankfully they award this to Hernandez. Hernandez actually outstruck him 79-63, significantly 91-65 total. I don't know what more you want. Outstruck him by 13 in round 1, 4 in round 2, and Hubbard did get the better of him in round 3. So I think people gave Hernandez 1 and 2, and then Hubbard won round 3. But 30-27, Chris Lee, what are you on? What are you on? Hernandez, this snaps a 2-fight losing streak. First win since February 2023. He's now 50-8. Good win for Hernandez. As for Hubbard, dude, I just don't think Hubbard's UFC quality. Okay, 1-3 in his last 4 fights in the UFC. He's just been abysmal. 1-1 in 2024. I don't know. I don't know what more you want from me. Hubbard, he's just kind of boring. There's a lot of unranked guys out there for him to fight, and I'm sure he will. I'm positive that he will. I'm sure we can find someone for him, but Hernandez getting it done here with the striking, defending the takedowns. Excellent work. Good stuff from Alexander Hernandez. And with that, we got to our second-to-last prelim, where the number 6-ranked Marina Rodriguez in the women's strawweight division took on the number 14th-ranked Yasmin Lucindo. And son of a gun, Marina lost again due to the damn grappling. She's got to get that figured out. Split decision. I had it going to Marina, but that's just me. Dan Furse and Mike Bell seeing it to Yasmin. Steve Farragar seeing it to Marina. Tolls from the fight, 33 significant strikes to 30 in favor of Marina Rodriguez. 65 total strikes, 55 in favor of Marina Rodriguez. Marina goes 1 of 1 on takedowns, landed one awkwardly at the end of the fight. Yasmin, 3 of 4 for 4 minutes, 40 seconds. Round one, you know, minute of control time for Lucindo, but did outstrike Marina 11-5. Round two, Marina comes out 16-10 striking-wise, got taken down once. Then round three, she landed a takedown. Yasmin landed a takedown. She outstruck her by 3. Kind of a boring fight. They're kind of going at the end a tiny bit. I just thought Marina won. Maybe it's biased because I picked her, but I just thought she won. Just from my observation of the fight, I thought Marina Rodriguez won. But I guess not. She does not get it done. And I guess she was the underdog. You know, for being 37, she actually looks decently well in shape. But Yasmin Lucindo, the 22-year-old, getting it done. She's now four-fight win streak, 4-1 in the UFC. Little four-fight win streak, good for her. She'll be ranked number 6 in the women's strawweight division. That's just crazy to me. She's going to be ranked number 6. Marina might get booted down to 8-7, who knows, whatever. Crazy, going from 14-6 off a split decision. That's wild to me. Lucindo, 17-5 professionally, good work. As for Marina Rodriguez, this sucks. She's now 1-4 in her last 5. Oh, it just sucks to see it. Out of that, last 2 have been split decisions. So I'll give her that. But Marina, I don't know how much more is left for you. They might boot you far down the rankings. Yasmin Lucindo, you know, you got, I believe, Jessica Andrade is an option. Mackenzie Dern, a couple people there. As for Marina, you know, I'd maybe like to see her against someone like Lupi Godinez, maybe Tabitha Ritchie, Amanda Hibas. You know, there's a couple options out there for her, but good win for Yasmin Lucindo. I'll give you your credit. There's that. After that, we got into some action, ladies and gentlemen. A little performance of the night bonus. We finally, Ryan Spann had us going, Court McGee had us going. We were on a little string of three boring decisions in a row. Joaquin Buckley, Wonder Boy Thompson. And this fight, this was good. From the get-go, entertaining. Buckley goes over, picks him up, takes him down. All right, 2 of 3 takedowns. Wonderboy outstrikes him, 15-6 in round number 1. Round 2, Buckley, 2 of 4 on takedowns. Wonderboy outstrikes him, 22-12. And it was just competitive. It was competitive. Wonderboy winning the striking. They actually had Wonderboy up on the scorecards, I believe, heading into round number 3. And it was entertaining. You know, Buckley, he'd gone 4 of 7, 4 minutes control time. But the striking of Wonderboy is very crisp, very clean. Round 3, though, Buckley starts pushing the pace, gets him up against the fence, clips him with a right hook right on the jaw, drops Wonderboy, lands about 2 follow-up shots, and Joaquin Buckley knocks out Wonderboy Thompson. Round number 3, I cannot believe it. I was so hype. I was running around my boy's garage. It was absolutely crazy. Joaquin Buckley, his 14th career knockout. That's right. How about that? How about that, Joaquin Buckley? Good for you. Joaquin Buckley will now be ranked number 9 in the UFC welterweight division. I assume Wonderboy Thompson will drop down to number 10. Great win. Great win. Proven, hey, he should have been on the main card. He said he should have been on the main card. He proved it here. Joaquin Buckley, 5-fight win streak now. 5-0 since moving down to welterweight. And how about that? Biggest win of his career now for Wonderboy Thompson. Incredible to see. As for Wonderboy, Stephen Thompson, 2-fight losing streak, now been finished in both of them. 1-4 in his last 5. Yeah, it might be time to hang him up. Yeah, great career, Wonderboy. I know he said he wants to keep fighting, but I don't really know what to keep doing with him. I honestly don't know what to keep doing with you, Wonderboy. You're going to be ranked number 10. I mean, you got Michael Morales on the come up. I mean, maybe the winner of Vicente Luque and Nick Diaz, if we want to do that. Kevin Holland rematch. I mean, MVP, Michael Van Page, that fight's always there. But I just think you're going to keep getting fed to young, hungry up-and-comers. And that's going to be the case. So, unfortunate to see. But Joaquin Buckley getting it done here. He'll be ranked number 9. And look, Gilbert Burns at 8. If he wants to stay in the UFC, you can do that fight. Colby Covington at 5. Look, I'm going to propose Joaquin Buckley, Sean Brady, Ian Garry, Jack Del Valle, any of these guys fight Colby Covington. I just think that's an option you can do. But Colby ducks everyone. Hey, if you want to go contender against contender, Sean Brady, Joaquin Buckley, that could be a fun fight. Ian Garry, Joaquin Buckley, who knows? But if I had to matchmake, you know, if Gilbert Burns is out of the picture, I think you do the Colby Covington fight. But at the same time, I have so many guys fighting Colby right now on my card, I don't know what you're going to do. Happy I got this correctly. Good job, Joaquin Buckley. With that, ladies and gentlemen, we got into the main card. And Kayla Harrison's arrival into getting a UFC title shot, not as hype as her debut. Okay, Kayla Harrison gets it done, beats Caitlin Vieira, 30-27, 30-27, 29-28. She dominated her. Okay, she dominated her. 55 significant strikes to 24, 98 total strikes to 67, 2 of 8 on takedowns, 8 minutes of control time, but just not that dominant. Just not that dominant, okay? And Caitlin Vieira, talented. Caitlin Vieira is super talented. There's a reason she was the number 2 women's bantamweight in the world. But, I mean, Kayla dominated her grappling round 1. Round 2, much closer. If anything, that's around Caitlin 1. Then Kayla Harrison closed it out. 1-4 on takedowns, 3 minutes of control time. Only allowed 5 significant strikes for Caitlin Vieira. So Kayla, 18-1 now, 2-0 in the year for 2024. And I'm assuming since, you know, we'll mention how, you know, Rockwell Penton's going to get booted down from women's bantamweight champion, I assume Kayla will actually be given the number 2 spot in the rankings, but she will be next in line for the title shot. Good win for her. Did it with the grappling. Did everything she needed to. She just could never get in a position to attempt a submission, to even go for a TKO. Kellen just had really good, you know, anti-finishing. Just was good at not getting finished. Kellen, you know, 1-2 now in her last 3. She will probably move down to the number 3 spot in the rankings. I think this perfectly sets up if you don't do Norma Dumont versus Macy Chison, Norma or Macy versus Kellen Vieira. But yeah, Kayla Harrison getting a title shot. I'm here for it. Good stuff. Absolutely good stuff. And there's a reason she was the minus 800 favorite. There's a reason she's a minus 800 favorite. 3-fight win streak now professionally as an MMA fighter. Good stuff. And then after that, we kind of went on an absolute doozy fest. Actually, I can't lie. Okay, I cannot lie. Kayla Harrison was a doozy fight. Pretty much everything but the main event was kind of an L. Okay, Roland Dolidze versus Kevin Holland. By the way, I did not catch these fights. Okay, I was at the bar having a good time. I was able to catch Khalil Roundtree Jr. versus Alex Pereira. That was that. All right, but Roman Dolidze, Kevin Holland, close striking round 1, 19-18. Roman landed a takedown, 2 minutes, 50 seconds control time. What do you know? Kevin Holland getting taken down, struggling to get back up. Technically going down as a TKO in for Roman Dolidze, his 8th of his career, as Kevin Holland can't continue after round 1 due to a rib injury or something, and then people are saying he was faking it. I don't know what's going on, but hey, Roman Dolidze bouncing back now, 2-fight win streak now, 2024. There you go. Roman Dolidze back in the win column. 14-3 now professionally for Dolidze. As for Kevin Holland, this is weird to say, but Kevin Holland is actually 1-3 in his last 4 fights with this defeat here. Very odd. Very odd. Doesn't even feel like it. 26-12 professionally. Look, Kevin will actually have his 30th professional bout next time he's up because he has a no contest. But Kevin suffering a defeat here. It was by injury. You know, which isn't too much. I'm sure he'll get booted from the welterweight rankings. He's currently tied for 15th. Dolidze currently at 10 at middleweight. You know, I think him versus Paulo Costa, him versus Brendan Allen, him versus Jared Cannonier. You can even do him versus Anthony Hernandez and Michelle Pereira, the winner of that fight. Those are options there for Roman Dolidze. But kind of boring here. You know, it's kind of just like, oh, okay, he can't continue. That sucks. That sucks, Kevin. Oh, well, see you next week. Kind of a bummer. But yeah. There's nothing more to really talk about there. I'm struggling to find the words here on how just to compliment this, and there's nothing complimentable. And then Roman Dolidze was then going around, he got his black belt, he was celebrating, you're like, okay, he just got injured, he can't continue, this isn't a real TKO win. So there's that. We then get even more controversial with our next fight, as Mario Bautista takes on Jose Aldo. And we go to a split decision here, 29-28 across the board, Mike Bell and Derek Cleary for Bautista, Chris Lee for Jose Aldo. And totals from the fight, 51 significant strikes to 49, 0-10 on takedowns from Mario Bautista, 7 minutes and 15 seconds of control time. People were arguing that Jose should have won it. People were in an uproar. I mean, people were legit going ballistic online that they didn't give Jose Aldo the decision. And I was like, okay. I picked Mario Bautista, so I was happy he got done. Bautista in round 1, won round 1. Okay, you cannot argue that. He did go 0-2 on takedowns, 2 minutes and 20 seconds to clinch, but 20-13 significant strikes-wise, his striking was looking good. All right, round 2, much closer. Jose edges him by 2 significant strikes, 0-4 on takedowns. And then round three, Mario 0 for 4, got struck by 7. Only 1 by total strikes, but 7 significantly. 2 minutes, 41 seconds of control time on the clinch. Goes to the judges' scorecards, and I think everyone was expecting. They put the crown on Jose Aldo, and it goes to Mario Bautista. I know everyone's in uproar, but in my opinion, you know, Jose Aldo, he's great at takedown defense, but, you know, Mirab Dovizioso did the same thing against him, and he couldn't take him down. You know, obviously, he actually attempted 16 takedown attempts on Jose Aldo, couldn't take him down. Mario Bautista only attempted 10. And I think it just speaks to the fact that, you know, Jose Aldo, this is what you get when you match him up with grapplers. This is what you get when you match him up with grapplers, all right? Look at the Jonathan Martinez fight. That was entertaining. It was all striking. Look at the Rob Font fight. All striking. Look at Pedro Munhoz striking. Marlon Vera striking. Piotr Jan striking. Just a whole matter of this. But you're putting him up against Mirab, putting him up against Mario Bautista. Grapplers? I don't know what you expect. Jose Aldo's 38 years old, okay? I don't know what more you want from him. You want to make a title run. I don't really see it. You could do some fun fights still. Okay, Mario Bautista is going to go from ranked number 11 to ranked number 10. Not too big of a jump. Jose versus Dominic Cruz. There's a fun fight for you. Love that fight right there. Even Jose Aldo, Henry Cejudo. You can do that fight as well. But let's talk about Mario Bautista, guys, for a second. 7-fight win streak. 7-fight win streak. Incredible. Going to be in the top 10. People are suggesting Marlon Vera. People are suggesting Rob Font. I really like the Marlon Vera fight. You could even make an argument for a loser of Piotr Jan, Davison Figueroa. I think the Marlon Vera fight's the option you go. But good work for Mario Bautista, okay? You can't hate him. Why are you hating on Mario Bautista? He did what he needed to do, kept his game plan going. He's now on a 7-fight win streak. You know who's not on a 7-fight win streak? Anyone ranked above him, okay? Mirab is the champion and Umar Nurmagomedov. Okay, your champion and the next contender are the only ones on a win streak that big. Good win for Mario. I'm a huge fan of you. After that, guys, we get into our co-main event of the evening, the women's title fight. And this was the final controversial thing of the night as Julia Pena wins a split decision where everyone, including the Bergskarkard, had Aquil Pantin win. I did not watch this. I actively did not watch this. I was not entertained by this in the slightest. But we correctly predicted that Julia Pena would regain the women's bantamweight championship, and she did. Aquil Pantin was the number 8 pound-for-pound fighter in the world, technically for women, that is. Julia Pena was 5, so I guess she will move up to the third spot, since Manfiora and Alex Grasso aren't champion. But yeah, Aquil Pantin will move down to the number 1 spot in the rankings. Julia Pena, your new champion. Totals from the fight, 1 knockdown for Aquil Pantin in round number 4. Both women landed exactly 92 significant strikes. Julia Pena, 35% ratio to 29% in terms of throwing. 123 to 112 total strikes in favor of Julia Pena. 2 of 3 on takedowns for Pena, 5 minutes 40 seconds, including a submission attempt in the third round. Round 1, Pena outstrikes her. Okay. Round 2, Pena outgrapples her. Okay. Pena outgrapples and outstrikes her in round 3. Pantin outstrikes her, drops Pena in round 4, and Pantin wins round 5 striking-wise, 35 to 27. So that's 3 to 2 right there, if we're going off of stats alone. Watching the fight, people had Pennington winning round 1, 4, and 5, I believe it was. So, there's that. I think it was arguably 2 and 3 for Pena on everyone's scorecard. But honestly, I could care less. I could honestly care less. Julia Pena has come back after 2 years and regained the belt. Okay, no matter of how she did it, she did it. Okay, and Pennington, well, you know, she was on a little 6-fight win streak. Good for her. She was boring. She barely promoted to the division. This is good for business. Julia Pena, style aside, she came in saying she was going to have a less aggressive style, because after she got dropped 3 times by Amanda Nunes. Here she is. She's the champion. She can talk on the mic. Kayla Harrison and her were chirping at each other at the press conference. There's your next matchup. There's your next matchup. Do it in April. Do it in March. Do it in June. There's your next fight. Kayla Harrison, Julia Pena. It is perfect for the women's bantamweight division. That's a fight I'm genuinely interested in. All right? I was not interested in Kayla Harrison, Kayla Vera. I was not interested in Julia Pena or Aquil Pantin. I'm interested in Kayla Harrison versus Julia Pena, as I just mentioned. So, good win for Pena. She'll face Kayla Harrison next. Good stuff there. As for Aquil Pantin, I mean, between Macy Chiasson and Norma Dumont, if they don't fight, one of them will fight Ketlin Vieira, the other one will fight Aquil Pantin, or you retire. You're 36 years old. You just, you know, you won the belt. That should be your crowning achievement. But I think it's pretty crazy that I think I'm going to look at my predictions for the end of the year. I did not think that Julia Pena was going to be champion by year's end. So congratulations to Julia Pena. I got to give it to her. Proving all the doubters wrong. I'm happy for her. But ladies and gentlemen, There was one fight left. There was the main event. There's a reason it was the main event, all right? We had just been through three boring decisions, an injury in round one. The only last exciting thing was the final prelim, which wasn't even on the pay-per-view. And then we got to Khalil Roundtree Jr. versus Alex Pereira. And that's right. Fight of the night. This was phenomenal. This was crazy. And I'm going to just say this right now. Alex Pereira is ranked number two in the men's pound for pound. I love you, Islam Makhachev. No other champion has had three title defenses this year. Islam hasn't had a single one except for Dustin Poirier so far. That's right. Alex Pereira, make him the number one pound for pound fighter on the planet. On the planet. Book him up in the rankings. Let's get it. From the get-go, Alex Pereira, Khalil Roundtree Jr., entertaining. Now, you go look at the stats. You're going to see Alex Pereira actually outstruck Khalil in round one 15-10 and 18-11 in round one and two. But when you actually watch the fight, Khalil won both those rounds. He was landing the bigger shots. He had better pace. And he just took Khalil Roundtree Jr. If this is a three-round fight, Khalil Roundtree Jr. wins round one and two. Hit a couple big shots on Pereira, all right? There was one moment Pereira was spinning and got clipped. And I thought he was going to get knocked down, but he was able to maintain himself. Alex Pereira, great work. We get into round three, though. Okay, Pereira starts getting in that flow. 31 significant strikes, 25. Khalil's getting busted up. Khalil is bloody. Okay, Pereira was finally getting into his groove. It was 2-1 heading to the fourth. And then round four comes around. By the way, Khalil Roundtree Jr. had never been past round three his entire career. A championship fight is his first time going to round number four. And he unfortunately had to take on prime Alex Pereira, who is one of the most dangerous. He's fighter of the year. He just locked up fighter of the year with this win. 63 significant strikes to 15 in a 4.5 minute span. Alex Pereira TKOs him. This was just phenomenal. I mean, Alex Pereira was slipping and ducking. Body shot, hitting him to the face. You're seeing blood spray everywhere. Khalil Roundtree's face looked like a map, a road map. Maybe rivers. It looked like a red river of blood going down his entire face. He's piecing him up. There's multiple times. The ending sequence takes 2 minutes. 2 minutes, 15 seconds. That's how long this was going for. And Khalil just about getting TKO'd. Throws one big punch. Pereira has to avoid being hit. And he even gets clipped with it. And he's able to keep going. And finally, he gets him up on the cage. Two massive body shots. Down he goes. Pereira doesn't even follow up. Is about to for a second. And he gets pulled off by Mark Goddard. Alex Pereira retains the men's light heavyweight championship. And this is just insane, if you ask me. All right. 12 career victories. 10 KOs now. 10 KOs now for Alex Pereira. He is on a 5-fight win streak. 5-0 since moving to light heavyweight. Last four fights have all been knockouts. All right, they've all been knockouts. Three title defenses in 2024. Three knockouts. He's Fighter of the Year. Okay, it is October 7th as I record this. Fighter of the Year 2024 is locked up. I don't care if John Jones comes back and gets the win. Okay, I don't care if Shavkat Rakhmonov wins at the end of the year. I don't care about anything, all right? And I love those guys, okay? 2024 Fighter of the Year is Alex Pereira. It's not even close. You know what? He's my number one pound for pound fighter on the planet. He is probably my light. He might be a better light heavyweight go than John Jones. I don't even know. I'm getting out of control right now. But Alex Pereira was on a different world in round number four of that fight. And talk about adversity. Okay, talk about adversity. I'm looking at Alex Pereira's run so far in the UFC. Okay, faced some adversity in round one against Andre Michaelis. His debut got out grappled, knocks him out 18 seconds in round two. Against Bruno Silva, gets taken down twice. Okay, by the way, that was his fifth MMA fight. Still outstrikes him. Okay. Sean Strickland, no adversity. Israel Adesanya was down 3-1 heading into round 5. That's adversity. Adesanya then knocks him out in the rematch. Kambalovich shows some grappling in round 1 and 2 that he faces. But other than that, Jiri offered him no adversity. Jamal Hill offered him no adversity. Jiri Prochazka offered him no adversity. Rounds 1 and 2, even in a bit in round 3 and 4, he had to deal with adversity from Khalil Roundtree Jr. He overcame it. Alex Pereira, your men's light heavyweight champion, number one powerful fighter on the planet. Khalil Roundtree Jr. suffering his third career loss by TKO. But man, just nothing bad to walk away from this. Just zero negatives for Khalil Roundtree Jr. He's currently ranked number 8. I'm actually going to move him up to number 5 in the rankings with this loss. I don't know if they're going to, but on my card, I'd have him pass Nikita Krylov, Volkan Oezdemir, and Alexander Rakic. What he did, I mean, just no one had done this except Adesanya. Okay, no one had done this except Adesanya against Alex Pereira. And Khalil Roundtree Jr. was able to do it. Obviously, we saw how good Pereira was, but amazing stuff there. Utterly amazing stuff. What's next for these guys? That's all we'll wrap this up right here. Alex Pereira, Look, Magomedov ranked number 2, Teixeira number 5 ranked Rakic. He doesn't even need that fight, okay? It's Magomedov. I got him with beating Rakic, taking on Pereira. But let's say Rakic somehow pulls off an upset and beats Magomedov, then he's next in line for the title shot. But it's got to be Magomed. He's the final ring. He's like the final stone that people are mentioning in the men's light heavyweight division, right? Number 1, Jiří Procházka, finished twice. 3, Jamal Hill, finished. Hamblehovich, beat. Besides that, you know, Volkanovski, Mirnikiya Krylov, no one really beat. Clem Rocha Jr., he's a stone. All right, people are mentioning his power. And I know you got Carlos Ulberg, you got Asmat Mirzakhanov, some undefeated guys, but no one's really out there except for Mamay Ankalaev, who people are saying, you know, he's knocking out guys. He has the grappling to beat him. It is very, I'll be very interested to see what happens, but Pereira versus Magomed, after that, it's looking like a double title shot, which will be warranted at that point. As for Khalil, tons of opportunities. You got Jan Blachowicz. You got the winner of Nikita Krylov versus, who is he taking on? Asmat Mirzakhanov? You got the winner of Volkan Ozdemir versus Carlos Ulberg. You got the winner of, you can even have him fight Jan Blachowicz. There's so many options for Khalil. He's just become a star, and I'm so excited to see where his career goes from here. But Alex Barra takes UFC 307. UFC 300, 303 and 307, the fastest three-tail defense in UFC history, belongs to Alex Barra. Amazing. Capping off fall. It's starting off fall with a bang. Yeah. Absolute banger. Though all of 307 as a whole, you know, you had three great finishes from Ryan Spann, Wonderboy Thompson, and Alex Barra. Other than that, a lot of decisions. But when you end the night with such a bang, you know, I compare this to UFC 302, UFC 303. When you end the night with such a bang, it's easy to overlook the bad stuff. So that'll do it, ladies and gentlemen. UFC 307. It was great. It was so fun. Honestly, this past weekend was such a blast. I had a great time. I'm so excited to see what's next for all these fighters. We'll, of course, be back this week with our Week 6 NFL predictions and UFC Vegas 98 preview predictions for that as well. I was debating trying to get a guest this week, but I do have multiple exams and marketing club this week, so probably not. We will work to get some for the rest of October. But as for now, guys, have an amazing week. Kick some butt this month. And as always, I will catch you next time on The Surprise Jab Podcast.